I felt cruelly deceived after accepting an invitation to the local ham radio club, only to learn ham radios are the most fraudulently named device, animal, or object since the titmouse. That's right, there is no ham in ham radios. But I got even. I stormed out without inviting them to my monthly meeting of the bacon radio enthusiasts. This is the Use All the Crayons podcast, a spoken word extravaganza that uses only two of the audio crayons, my voice and the bell. Sure, sometimes I cough or fart, but it's not like they're invited to perform. I'm Chris Rodell, and I graduated from Ohio University in Athens, Ohio in 1985. It was back in Athens Saturday to meet with some old pals and repeat over and over and again the three lines that I believe are deserving of t-shirt immortalization. Ohio University, where I learned to drink responsibly whenever I should and irresponsibly whenever I can. Ohio University, where I used to run naked and where I now limp fully clothed. Ohio University, yeah, we know we're old enough to be your grandfathers, but we're immature enough to be your prom dates. This was from back in 2012. I guess it all starts with me wanting to be a garbage man. Some would say I achieved that goal from 1992 to 2000 when I worked for the National Enquirer, a job that required sifting through the occasional trash bin. But I'm not talking about a journalistic trash man. I'm talking about the real thing. As a boy, I'd thrill every time the big truck with those burly men hanging off the back came roaring up the road. They were big, noisy, and boisterous. They'd seize the big barrels, frisbee the lids into the hedges, and dump all our stinking trash into the big maw in the back. Then, they'd press a button, and all the newspapers, foodstuffs, bottles, and cans we threw away before enlightened recycling began was devoured in the hungry maw. I never dreamed of sitting in a small, still room all by myself for hours crafting pointless stories destined to be ignored by the multitudes. Gee, when you think of it in those stark terms, it's a wonder I don't run screaming over to waste management and beg them to let me jump on the back of a big green truck bound for the local dump. And really, why wouldn't most men? It's real work. Martin Luther King Jr. was slain while he was engaged trying to bestow common dignity to Memphis trash haulers. The association further ennobles my appreciation for the men who haul garbage. That's why this morning I'm feeling so ashamed. I played a malicious trick on a man who contributes so much more to society than I ever hoped to. Yes, this morning I pranked the trash man. I know every weekend of the day he shows up in the pouring rain, sizzling sun, and does his dirty duties. When the record February snows closed schools, streets, and businesses, the two-man crew never missed a day or slipped off schedule. And every day when they're out there behind the pond, the tavern behind the which my office is strategically located above, I stop whatever I'm doing and race to the window to watch. It's true, it takes them about 10 minutes to hook up the winch to raise the dumpster so all the trash falls into the truck. The two-man crew is so conscientious I've never seen so much as a bottle cap drop into the parking lot. Then the shaven head dude with a sunny demeanor to match his tan complexion reverses the procedure. The winch cable sets the dumpster back down near the fence, between the lot and the family home behind it. It's easier work than it used to be, safer, I'm sure, but there's still a potential for a careless hand to get squashed by heavy lifting machinery. Then Baldy unhooks the cable, jumps back on the truck, and is again on his merry way. But early this spring, I observed him adding a surprising natural function to the procedure. He'd step behind the angled dumpster with his back to the fence. He'd remove his work gloves and set them on the big green bin. He'd look left. He'd look right. Then he'd look left again. Even with his body concealed, any man, and most worldly women, could tell exactly what he was doing. The trash man was urinating behind the dumpster. It was in broad daylight. It's in a business parking lot that would soon be crowded with lunch patrons. It's between two busy streets where people push strollers and walk their dogs. It seemed so audacious. I was amazed. I certainly couldn't begrudge him for a relief. It's not likely the local restaurant or customer would let him welcome into their homes to use the bathroom. So a guy's got to do what a guy's got to do. Yet a surprisingly prim part of me felt compelled to signal that using my bar's dumpster for a toilet was improper. Loud truck. That's a motorcycle. He's recklessly driving. Yet a surprisingly prim part of me felt compelled to signal that using my bar's dumpster for a toilet was improper. So today, from behind the curtains of the second floor office, I lay in wait for him to answer nature's call. He did his job, then he removed the gloves. He looked left, he looked right, he looked left again. I waited till he assumed the relaxed posture of a man whose bladder is beginning to spill. Then I pushed the red panic button on my car fob. Not 20 feet to his left, and the only car in the parking lot, my Saturn View began rhythmically and loudly honking. I don't know how I expected him to react, but here's what happened. He jumped as if he'd been tased. His feet left the ground. His expression was similar to that of a jewel thief caught in the act. A weekly routine of his that usually lasted in excess of 50 seconds was over in 8. Startled, he zipped up and zipped back into the truck. In a flash, he and the truck were gone. Only an echo of the engine remained and the swirling stink. And there, behind the cowardly curtain, I began to laugh. I laughed my ass off for about 10 minutes. An hour later, every couple of minutes, I'm still chuckling. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And I feel small because of it. It was a dirty, low-down trick on a noble, hard-working man doing a job few admire and fewer would do. I know someday I'll need to make amends. One day I'll see him in the parking lot, and I'm going to apologize. I'll tell him about my dirty trick and the prankster in me that just couldn't resist. Then I'll offer my hand in apology and respect. I hope he'll shake it. And if he does, I know exactly what I'm going to do next. I'll rush straight to the bathroom and give that hand a really good scrubbing. I'm beginning to understand the peacefulness that comes from no longer trying to change the minds of the mindless. This is from Christmas in July in 2015. The stockings aren't hung by the chimney with care, and St. Nicholas is nowhere in sight. You can stand in our doorway and demand figgy pudding until you're blue in the face. You can go. You won't get some. No Black Friday sales stampedes. No wrapping. No in-laws. No savior thanking hoo-ha. Merry Christmas in July. It's a second secular essence of a holy day that everyone loves for all the wrong reasons. It's only 153 days till Christmas. That means it'll only be about 54 days until our area retailers begin cramming Christmas down our throats. It will be sales, displays, carols, and mercenary goodwill even before they put out the Halloween candy. For me, it's all gone from oh, holy night to oh, holy crap. Just thinking about Christmas in October through December raises my blood pressure. And I'm not talking about the sacred parts, which I enjoy. I love when duties cease, ease, and there's time to bask in the soulful understanding about what Christmas really matters, why Christmas really matters. That lasts about 30 minutes. Then it's back to strategizing party visits like Ike did on D-Day. That's what makes Christmas in July such a subversive pleasure. I started doing it for years for the girls about 5 years ago. And that could be a sort of surprise poor man's Christmas, which makes perfect sense because I'm a very poor man. What's great is the expectations are absolute zero. In fact, as I type this, our daughters, ages 11 and 6, don't even know it's Christmas in July. In about 20 minutes, I'll begin blasting Bob Dylan's 2009 Oddball Christmas Carol collection, Christmas in the Heart. I love Dylan, but hearing him sing, Here Comes Santa Claus, Winter Wonderland, and Must Be Santa in July is perfectly surreal. Heck, given the nonsensical interpretations of his own hits, any more hearing Dylan sing Blowing in the Wind is perfectly surreal. The jarring sounds will cause such a clatter, the girls will storm out of their rooms ready to rage. Their instinct will be to shout at me for waking them up, and even worse, making them listen to Dylan. Then, hallelujah, they'll see the Christmas in July card table, and the Merry Christmas in July cake surrounded by the newspaper wrapped in presents, and then include a plastic DVD crate containing a video store rental of the classic A Christmas Story. It's Christmas in July. It's also unexpected. Part of that is because I don't do it every July 25th. Not having it every year allows forgetful loved ones to be surprised when it suddenly reappears without any holiday hype that is typical with the other holidays. That's the beauty of Christmas in July. You make up the rules as you go along. For instance, one year I bought for a centerpiece a lovely mistletoe that means that, and roses, floral arrangement. This year I didn't want to risk feeling stress, so instead I used my Pittsburgh Pirate ball cap as the centerpiece. It's nice too for Val because the traditional Christmas, she does all the shopping, all the cooking, all the cleaning, and all the fretting. Really, with me doing all the drinking, it's a wonder it bugs me so much. So I get a nice bottle of wine and a card thanking her for all she does. You know what the best part of Christmas in July is? Telling people you're shopping for Christmas in July. You get a real charge out of sharing the whole idea with people. They seem so charmed. I guess that's because we could all use a little more Christmas around the year, around the clock. But none of us wants to go to any more Christmas to have it. So it's nice to take maybe one day a year and have a little Christmas without all the hell and the hassle. It's nice too because the momentary break from having to think about the gun violence, pedophiliac coaches, and the national heartbreak of Twilight actress Kristen Stewart hooking up with snaky director Rupert Sanders. It's a nice respite. And now you know for one day really tis the season. I wonder what they told instead of knock-knock jokes before the advent of doors. This is a letter I wrote to a 10-year-old girl, an aspiring writer, after she gave me the only copy of her 22-page handwritten book to review, and I lost it. I had her father read it first. I thought there was a chance that he'd hit me. Instead, he got choked up and shook my hand. I gotta be honest, I gave a lot of serious thought to lying, trying to lie my way out of this one. Dear Grace, when your father asked if I'd be willing to read something he'd written, I didn't hesitate. I'm more than happy to encourage young writers like yourself to pursue the kind of life I've been lucky enough to have lived. I've been writing for 40 years, and I still tingle with satisfaction knowing that I've crafted a sentence that people will want to reread because it made them laugh or think. He gave me one draft of the book you started in one night on Wednesday. On Thursday, I did something wise, followed by something unbelievably stupid. First, the wisdom. I teach creative writing at Point Park University. I told my students that I'd begun a new book, and I began to read to them what you'd written. I read them two pages and asked them what they thought. One student said it was imaginative. One student said writing was well-paced. Two said to me to keep reading. They wanted class turned into a story time. Then I confessed I'd lied. I told them the writer was a 10-year-old daughter of one of my Ligonier friends. And they were amazed. One said you must be a prodigy. I said that that's a perfect word to describe what you're doing. Now for the stupid part. I don't know if you can forgive me, but I lost what you put so much heart into. I have no excuse. The class is 3 hours long and leads to a sprawl of papers, and I should have been more careful with something so precious. You can be furious with me. I deserve it. But I'm going to urge you to do something else. I'm going to urge you to take 3 deep breaths through the nose and do it all over again. The best writers aren't really writers at all. They're rewriters. A first draft can be a frolic, very loose, almost stream of conscious. I'm not saying yours was, but a rigorous rewrite shines with a discipline that demands respect. You can curse me, I'd start with that. But I recommend you learn from this and add it is another rung on your ladder to success I'm sure you'll ascend. Lastly, make copies of everything. It's a lesson every writer learns. It was just my incompetence that gave you a particularly vivid lesson at an early age. There's still many pockets of America where, do you think wrestling's fake is considered a sophisticated pickup line. That's all for today. I've got to get the Christmas in July thing going. Hope you have a good week. Merry Christmas in July.